What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, and special guest on the show. Cam, is this your first time?
I've been on a few pods with you guys.
First time on the preview series.
First time on the preview series, yeah.
Yeah, definitely the first time on the preview series. Cam, of course, always a pleasure to talk Boston Celtics with you. And Nick, we're rolling on through these team previews.
And I'm pumped to have Cam on. Not only is he one of the best Celtic writers we have, he's one of the best writers we have at OTG. So be sure to check his work out. You can find the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. Also head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass. Discount code OTG5 will save you $5 on any OTG merch. But we're going to dive into the Celtics. And before we talk next year, we're going to look back at last season. And obviously, you know, it wasn't the expectations we had for the Celtics going into the year. They didn't live up to them. 49 wins, knocked out in the second round in 5 games to the Milwaukee Bucks. What emoji would you use to summarize the Celtics from last season?
I have 3, Keating. The first one is the barf emoji. The person that's barfing, because barfing is not ideal, and last season for the Celtics was not ideal. The second emoji that I have is the facepalm emoji, because of the reasons I just outlined. And the third is the little fish emoji, because I think Celtics fans need to have the memory of a goldfish moving.
My emoji is the, I might have already used this, but it's okay. It's the steam blowing out the nostrils. I don't think I've used that. Which is good, because I predicted the Celtics to win 67 games last year. I was in the Bill Simmons category of delusion. Not really delusion. I mean, on paper, this team should have been a lot better than they were. Chemistry, as we know. But that's my emoji, because it was a frustrating year to watch the Celtics, which is a team that I generally watch a decent amount of.
Yeah, I'm along the same line as you guys. I got the angry purple face because I just felt like nobody was happy in Boston last year. You know, Kyrie, Jaylen Brown, whoever it is, nobody was happy with their role or how the season went out. But on to the positive side, what was the biggest positive takeaway from last season?
I'll go again. I mean, the biggest positive, if you're a Celtics fan, is the emergence of Marcus Smart as more than a one-trick pony. He's always been such an impactful player, so much better than his stats, but he was definitely pigeonholed as a defensive player. And I know that the year saying that he became more than a defensive player and the year that he got his first defensive player award is a little ironic, but he shot 37% from three. He emerged as a leader, has continued to kind of show some chops as a ball handler, and was just like an immense defender. So Marcus Smart is the positive for sure. And then possibly it's the second half of the season for Jaylen Brown, but my definitive answer is Marcus Smart.
I think my positive would have to be Marcus Smart to a degree as well. But I'll go a little bit off of that, and I'll just say it really was Marcus Smart. Even Jason Tatum had just holes in his game. Obviously the meeting with Kobe in the prior offseason. He kind of changed his shot selection. I did like Jaylen Brown, although Jaylen Brown certainly was streaky as hell throughout most of the season. But I do think that at least last year in the stretches I saw Jaylen Brown, I still see a lot of potential there. And I still see a guy who's warranted better minutes and bigger minutes. But because, you know, Gordon Hayward, Tatum, Marcus Morris, there's just a log jam at that wing position. So Jaylen Brown at times, I don't think he got as much run time as he probably should have gotten.
Yeah, I think you guys nailed it from a player perspective. You know, Marcus Smart is a guy that actually had a good year. A lot of players were just all over the place. I think another positive takeaway would be that they didn't cash out on, like, their draft picks. You know, they saved them for this offseason, drafted a whole bunch of rookies, which we'll talk about later. But they could have easily went all in last year with the roster that they had, and they didn't. They played it a little bit safe, and it was a good move because, obviously, that team just didn't have the chemistry to be a championship team. But what would be the biggest negative takeaway from last season?
The biggest negative takeaway outside of the Kyrie Irving experience was that, yeah, and Corey hit the nail on the head. There's just lingering questions about Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I think, Nick, you're right. The Celtics kind of miraculously pivoted away from the disastrous Kyrie Irving experience. And there's a lot of positivity in Boston that we'll get to, but Well, so much of it kind of hinges on Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum continuing to grow. So the negative takeaway is that the chosen Suns kind of disappointed. And not only is that scary for what happens in this upcoming season for the Celtics, but really the next, I don't know, 5 years of basketball in Boston is predicated on one or both of these guys taking not just another leap, but another leap after that. And I think last season, amid all the Kyrie drama, Celtics fans first got a first look at what happens if Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum fizzle out.
Yeah, I mean, negative takeaway would just be how some of these young guys halted. I mean, even Terry Rozier is not there anymore. We saw Terry Rozier take a massive step back, I thought, last year. Obviously, his minutes got cut down because Kyrie was there. You can make the negative argument, too, that just Gordon Hayward not being Gordon Hayward. Obviously, when you suffer a major leg injury, it just takes some time to get back into the rhythm of things. I saw this with Paul George. He came back to the Pacers after fracturing his leg. He just wasn't the same until like a year and a half after the surgery. And Hayward, for a lot of the year, Brad Stevens certainly tried to get him into the offense, tried to push feed him some touches to get him going. And that has even been, you know, cited as something that irritated some other guys on the roster, Kyrie Irving in particular. So I think Gordon Hayward not being himself and them having to try and utilize him in the offense was a negative takeaway as well. Even though he did find some momentum in the end of the regular season, once again in the playoffs, Gordon Hayward wasn't very effective.
Yeah, once again, you guys nailed it. I mean, the chemistry was a major issue across, you know, different players on the team, from Kyrie Irving to Jaylen Brown to Marcus Morris. You know, just guys weren't getting along. The group just didn't really gel. And like you said, with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they were just kind of sporadic. There were still moments during the season you're like, oh, man, this guy's going to be an all-star. He's so good. And then they obviously still can be that player. But right now it's just a little unsurety with who they are moving forward. Hopefully this season changes that. But I think that's the biggest negative takeaway. Now, moving forward to next year, looking at the OTG power rankings via our staff, they have the Celtics coming in at number 10. Do you guys think this is a fair ranking, too high, too low? What do you think?
Well, first, I just want to curse Drew Hanlon a little bit. For ruining Jason Tatum last season. Corey, do you want to take this one first because you had a hand in the logic behind these rankings?
Sure, I'll go first on this one. I think it's fair, and I'll say it's fair because I do think, I mean, yes, Kemba is a lesser of a player than Kyrie, but I do think Kemba fits in with the Brad Stevens system, the ball stuff that they're going to try and run this year a lot better, you know, more of a team guy than an eye guy. I think Tatum and Jaylen Brown being in bigger roles will help them, or Tatum in the same role and Jaylen in a bigger role will help. My one issue is the center position for this team. Enes Kanter being the guy with, you know, Daniel Theis and Robert Williams, Time Lord, as those backup centers. I think there is some concern there and some issue in a rim protection standpoint. So I think this is fair, but this Celtics team, I think, there's room of improvement at the center position that I think can elevate this team slightly farther. So I think their guard position is solidified.
I don't disagree that there's problems down low. And I actually do have some hesitation that Kemba could be a good stats, bad team, perennial kind of guy. In trying to assess if number 10 is fair or not, the first place I went was, and I want to open this up to you guys, if the Celtics played in the Western Conference, would they even make the playoffs?
I think they'd still make the playoffs. I think they'd probably be bottom in the West. And
yeah,
I think
7-8.
Yeah. And like with this ranking, if you really look at, I mean, we have the luxury of looking at all the teams in this range, Cam, you don't. So just to give, you know, the listeners an idea, you know, at number 8 is the Blazers, number 9 is the Warriors, number 10 the Celtics, 11 Pacers, 12 Nets, 13 Raptors, 14 Spurs. So it's like a lot of teams in this range, there's just a lot of question marks. You know, you look at the Warriors, what about the whole Klay Thompson coming back, D'Angelo Russell going to fit? You know, we mentioned the Celtics will have the issue at center position, really dependent on a lot of young guys. Pacers are worrying about Victor Oladipo. The Nets are bringing in Kyrie and a whole bunch of different pieces. And then even if you get down to 13, you have the Raptors. They just lost Kawhi Leonard. And at 14, the Spurs, you know, we don't really know what to expect because they're hoping DeJounte Murray can come back and be a splash. So I looked at it and and I was like, oh, the Celtics probably should be lower. But then when you look at the teams in the range, I think they're right in the right range considering all these teams.
Yeah, I mean, despite everything, I think you're right. There are fewer question marks. They have a lot to figure out. But then I think if we're just considering where they'll fall in terms of wins at the end of the season, which I know we'll get to, they have every reason to sprint throughout the regular season. And a few of the teams that you just identified will kind of assuage their way through to the spring. So, yeah, so to answer your question, probably 10 is right around the right range. But unfortunately, as of someone calling in from Boston, it could be closer to like 15, 16, and I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I think they easily could drop. I think there is a possibility maybe, you know, if Tatum really popped, Jaylen Brown really popped, and, you know, Time Lord just, like, comes up as his defensive player, then, yeah, maybe the Celtics can move up. But I think it's more likely they're here or lower, at least by the end of the season, because I could see the teams like the Pacers, Nets, not really the Raptors, jump the Celtics. But, you know, we'll see how the season plays out.
And put in perspective, 10 on these rankings puts the Celtics as third in the East behind only the Sixers and Bucks.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think, like we said, you know, the Celtics, Pacers, Nets, and Raptors are kind of almost all in the same range, depending on how you view the Raptors. I know I'm not quite as high, but a lot of people are. I think the Celtics, Pacers, and Nets will really be competing for that 3 and 4 seed.
Yeah, it's easy to get excited if you're looking at how the Celtics reloaded after the Kyrie Irving thing. And then it's easy to also be pessimistic.
Yeah.
There's so much riding on. They're the fifth youngest team in the league now. So they're riding on the curtails of kind of optimism. And then they do have a great player-focused coach who is Brad Stevens' entire experience in the NBA has been taking players like Jordan Crawford and turning them into borderline stars. So I think sticking with 10 feels like a safe choice.
Yeah. And talking about that, all the young guys, and Brad Stevens obviously is a big year for him, but they brought in a lot of rookies. Romeo Langford, Grant Williams, Carson Edwards, Tremont Waters, and Taco Fall. What do you guys like about these rookies?
Taco Fall's not on the team yet.
Oh, okay. Well, they drafted him, so possibility to the two-way contract, or maybe he doesn't make the team.
Yeah. I don't know. That's, again, we're identifying a possible 3 seed in the Eastern Conference, and you just listed off a third of the roster as being like teenagers or in their early 20s. It's great. They're really interesting players. I think Langford is particularly intriguing just because I don't see him talked about that much, even though he went 14th. Carson Edwards and Grant Williams have been really exciting to follow as a fan. But at the end of the day, there's such big question marks because they're rookies and they may be asked to play big minutes depending on we'll get to the starting lineup and kind of how the roster shakes out.
Yeah. So normally when it comes to this portion of the show, I don't know a ton about rookies. I will say that Carson Edwards is a guy that I'm completely on board with, and I hope he pops off. I hope he gets playing time. Guy who played with Purdue, had a very nice tournament run, is instant offense, showed some of that in summer league. Again, summer league, you take with a grain of salt because a lot of these guys will never touch an NBA court. But Carson Edwards definitely showed flashes of being a scorer. He has that little guy mentality, not that he can replicate what Isaiah Thomas did in his years as a Boston Celtic, but he has that sort of chip on my shoulder attitude to him. So I think Carson Edwards is a guy that I definitely have my eyes on. Romeo Langford, there's certainly potential there, but I like Edwards from like a boom or bust perspective, and then Taco Fall if he makes the roster. I mean, that guy is really tall, but when I watch him, he's just slow as hell. Like, I just don't think he's fast enough to play at the NBA level personally. But Carson Edwards is definitely a guy I'm watching.
Yeah, I think it would make sense to sign Taco maybe to a two-way and kind of see what you got. I think you'd have an idea after one season with your organization if he's good enough to be an NBA player. But if you had told me in the beginning of the year, beginning of last season, that the Celtics were going to use all these draft picks, I would have been like, no way. So I think it's surprising they're coming in, but it works out perfectly considering they lost Kyrie and Al Horford. That's almost like a retool of young talent. And you don't expect all these guys to pop off, but if you can get, you know, two of them to pop, then I think you're in a really good position. But moving on to free agency, talking about the big additions, Kemba Walker and Enes Kanter. Cam, were you happy when they kind of rebounded from Horford and Kyrie to grab these two? Or is it like, oh, I wish they could have got more? This is great. We didn't think we were going to get anything.
So I was in Cuba at the end of June and the first 2 days of July. So all of the lead up, I think there were whispers about Kemba to Boston, but really it didn't have any momentum before I went dark, just because I didn't use my phone when I was down there. So I got on the plane and through like crippled plane Wi-Fi, I was getting all the updates about what had happened in free agency. So I didn't even have like the lead up to kind of emotionally process it. I went to the University of Pittsburgh, so I'm not supposed to like Kemba Walker, but I do love New York point guards, and I love that good guy Kemba is just like through and through exactly that. Like he just seems like he has always been a positive force in any locker room he's in. He's undersized, which is scary. I don't know that much about his defense, and he's not proven himself to be a winner of any real consequence in the NBA, but he's also never played with talented players, really, except for one Al Jefferson season, maybe. So I was with my sister's fiance on the plane, and we had like a giggly little moment. But the more that I thought about it, the more that I ultimately will lament that I have serious pause. I think it's great because we've seen what Brad Stevens did with Isaiah Thomas and an undersized point guard that's really good in the pick and roll. And it was really fruitful. But at the same time, the Celtics are coming out of this just like chemistry nightmare, and Kemba Walker seems to be the, excuse me, polar opposite of Kyrie Irving in terms of teammate relations. So I think that's really exciting to break down as a Celtics fan. But short of Steph Curry, I can't think of an undersized point guard that like really instills great confidence. Because Kemba's not, you know, as explosive as some other point guards of his stature. So I wonder if he'll be the closer for the team, which then goes back to as excited as I am for Kemba, he can't do everything for the team. What are the Jays going to do? And then Cantor's a great dude, but like he is such a sieve on defense that I don't know that that's sustainable in a Brad Stevens system, unless they retool and they just go bonkers on offense and hope to blow everyone out of the gym every night.
So Kemba was a good signing because, not that I think Kyrie is obviously a better player, but you're losing one star point guard and you're still getting a star point guard to a degree, maybe tier two to tier three. There are concerns about his defense, Cam. I agree with you there, and how much of the stats are inflated when you're on a bad Charlotte team that's made the playoff 2 out of his, I think, 9 years in the NBA or 8 years in the NBA. How much do you gauge those stats being inflated? I think those are all fair questions. Him being undersized, how does he look on the backside of, or how does he look at, 2 years from now when he's, 32, 33? I think those are all valid concerns. I think Kemba, from the one thing I like about Kemba coming to Boston is this is a guy who definitely plays. We saw it on Team USA. He doesn't have an issue not being the guy, although maybe you can make the argument that Team USA needed him to be the guy. But there are benefits to him being so care, so not careless, so not a
Team
boss,
oriented.
Easy
right?
going.
Oriented. The Brad Stevens will love having a guy like Kemba who's not gonna need to have this many shots to be happy on this offense. I think that's the main benefit. The Cantor stuff, it was almost like you just needed a center and he was the guy out there to get. The one good thing about Cantor is he is a bull. I mean, this is a guy who works hard. This is a guy who tries. He can give you a double-double in his sleep. Defensively, there is not much there. That's just how it is with Cantor. You're looking at a guy who can give you 14 points, give you 14 rebounds, but probably give up just as many points. So that's the one concern with Cantor. But I love the addition to Kemba. I thought it was a good move because if you lost Kyrie for nothing and Al Horford, this would have been a really bad offseason.
But that's what's troubling, and you already said this. It's not clear that they'll even go with a traditional center, let alone make it Cantor. But if you're getting 80 cents on the dollar with Kemba to Kyrie, that's fine. But the greatness that was Al Horford had so much to do with his intangibles and then also his defense. And you're not getting 80 cents on the dollar with Cantor. So I think Kyrie's raw output might not be as missed, but replacing, I don't know, Marcus Smart at center or Enes Kanter or Enes Kanter at center for Al Horford or in place of Al Horford, just it doesn't hold a candle, you know?
Yeah. And then this kind of leads me to my point is like, I think you'd feel a lot better about the Kemba Walker signing if they still had Al Horford and Aaron Baines, because, you know, you mentioned Brad Stevens did a great job with Isaiah Thomas. He also did a great job protecting him defensively because he had so many good defensive players. He could run a system. So that's where the concern comes, because if you're putting Kemba and Kanter out there, you're trying to get those two in a pick and roll. But from a personality perspective, I think Kemba's going to be a great fit. It seems like he's already getting along with the guys at Team USA. And I think I would have loved the Kanter signing for Boston last season if he went with them on the buyout market, because they really have needed a good rebounder, some offensive punch down low. But now they don't have Horford, and Kanter, like you mentioned, Cam, doesn't come close to replacing the type of player Horford is defensively. Just the intangibles, the positioning, and the communication. You're not going to get that from Enes Kanter. You're going to get the boards and the inside points, but there's going to be an issue at center they'll have to figure out, and we'll talk about that later. But getting to departures, Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier, Aaron Baines. Other than Al Horford, who do you wish they were able to keep?
I guess Baines is the answer. It's not really clear to me why they let him go or traded him away. I think
their space, I would guess.
I think there are expectations for Al Horford and then also for the summer at large. I mean, that dirty laundry will get aired out throughout the season. But yeah, Baines was never really himself this past season. He was hurt, and then he wasn't, then he was hurt, then he wasn't. But to your point, Nick, just having a reliable bruiser a la Aaron Baines is going to be sorely missed, because as much as Rob Williams has the athleticism, he is, I'm going to look it up right now, he's 20 years old. Oh, that's a different Rob Williams. Are they related? This Rob Williams was born in 1997. He's skinny and he's unproven. So I'm going to miss Aaron Baines. Aaron Baines.
I think from a team standpoint, you miss Baines the most, because if you're going to lose Horford, you would like to still have the defensive force that is Aaron Baines down low. And obviously Baines became a 3-point marksman in the playoffs from the corner. So I think Baines,
and I think he continued in FIBA. Like, I think he's been knocking down threes for Australia.
That's nice. I mean, that's the Phoenix should be looking forward to that. And also, this is not a Phoenix Suns podcast, but I heard they might play DeAndre Hunton and Aaron Baines at the same time. So that's funny. but I think you miss Baines, but, you know, if you're looking at another guy, like, I liked what Marcus Morris gave the Celtics team. Obviously, he's somewhat of a hothead at times. You know, we had the Jaylen Brown and Marcus Morris shoving match or yelling match on the sideline earlier this season. Marcus Morris is definitely a streaky shooter. Had some really nice moments offensively for the Celtics, a very good wing defender. So you might miss Marcus Morris to a degree, but that's only, in my eyes, if Hayward isn't Hayward. You know, if Hayward comes back and is 80 to 85% of who he once was, you're not going to miss Marcus Morris. But I think between Morris and Baines are the guys you miss. Yeah. Sorry, Kyrie.
And Morris trailed off so much at the end of last season that, I mean, he really helped keep the Celtics afloat for stretches, but he wasn't an integral part of the team when they needed it most.
Yeah, I think you're banking on one of the other forwards to step up and kind of give you the replacement of his production, but they really don't have anybody that can replace Aaron Baines, like Cam pointed out. But moving on to next season, what would be the biggest X factor for this team? Non-specific player, and it can't be health.
Corey, you want to go first?
No, go ahead, Cam. What do you got?
I put down continuity and chemistry. There's just... It's so frustrating to talk about last season. Terry Rozier was pissy, maybe understandably. Kyrie was – Nick, good luck. And
you I'll know, take Jaylen, him with pleasure.
Let's check in this time next year. Jaylen Brown – just everyone was in turmoil. And so not only were they upset, but you didn't know what you were going to get on a given night. The season felt so episodic. So what's – why that's such a big X factor is not only hopefully they have the Celtics turn to that page, but as, again, we're about to discuss the starting lineup and kind of the hierarchy on the roster isn't necessarily that clear. So assuming, oh, Kyrie's out of town, there's going to be continuity, you can't take that for granted if you're the Celtics. I have another one. Sorry.
Okay.
The other biggest X factor is the rest of the Eastern Conference, because we all have penciled in that the Bucks and the Sixers are going to be the top dogs, and that seems pretty fair. But between the Pacers and the Nets and maybe even the Heat and the Magic, it's not clear to me anyways how things are going to shake out and where the Celtics will find themselves, not necessarily in the standings, but just in terms of talent and how good they are at winning high-level basketball games. So the Celtics might have great continuity and they might have great chemistry and totally put last season in the rear view, but if the rest of the Eastern Conference is on their game, it might not be all that meaningful for the Celtics. So those are my two X factors, which I know is antithetical to what an X factor is.
It's okay. That second one is really interesting, and we've been lucky to have a lot of good X factors via our guests. But what do you got, Corey?
I had chemistry, but I'm going to go a different route. So I'm going to go with Brad Stevens.
Cool.
Obviously, Brad Stevens became like boy wonder his first couple of years in the NBA. Fantastic out-of-timeout coach.
Scorn in your voice, Corey.
What happened?
I said, I sense some scorn in your voice.
You know, last season was rough for Brad Stevens. It was the first time he had to really deal with an ego, and which was Kyrie Irving. Not just an ego, but just the turbulent, wishy-washy attitude that is Kyrie Irving. Where on, you know, any given week he can be checked in, and any given week he can be checked out. And that was tough for Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens wanting to try and get Gordon Hayward, who they're paying all this money to, brought into the offense to get him going, having to try and balance all these young guys who had just the year prior gone, you know, toe-to-toe with LeBron James in the Eastern Conference Finals. There was a lot of egos and personalities to manage on the Celtics team, which I thought he struggled with, which isn't a bad thing, I think, because I think it's, at the end of the day, a learning experience for Brad Stevens, who those first early years had, you know, those rebuilding Celtics teams, which really just exceeded all expectations with Isaiah Thomas, you know, Bradley and Jay Crowder and Horford those first couple of years. This year, how does he manage Kemba Walker? You know, how does he manage these young guys who, once again, will have bigger roles within the offense? How does he manage Gordon Hayward another year after surgery? And how does he balance the center question we have? You know, is it Kanter? Is it going small? Is it Robert Williams? Is it Daniel Tice? How does he plug in guys to give this team the best chance to win on a nightly basis? And does he get back to that this is a top three coach in the league status?
Yeah, that's another great one, Corey. And I think you look at coaching as a big X factor this year because there's so many young players on the roster. And a lot of people believe, you know, Brad Stevens coaches best when he can actually coach. And that's when you have younger guys around. For me, I'm going to go with the progress of the young players, specifically Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. You look at that young core, as I think, Cam, you said, the Jays. Do they take that next step together? Are they that duo that is going to bring the Celtics to be a playoff team for the next 5 to 7 years? You know, how much progress do you get from these rookie players? Does Robert Williams turn to be a great center that they can use and they don't have to worry as much about Enes Kanter being there? So I think the development of the young core is really going to be a crucial part of the season. Now, who do you guys have for the opening night starting lineup?
I have Kemba and Smart in the backcourt. I have Tatum and Brown kind of as that like 3-4 wing hybrid. And then I have Kanter as the starting center, despite everything that we just said.
I have the same one.
Yeah, I have the same one as well.
Yeah, the whole suggestion that just put your 5 most talented guys out there, meaning that Hayward in this scenario is coming off the bench, is a smart one. And in the abstract, I don't think that I think there will be nights where that's at least the closing lineup, but really and truly the biggest obstacles, like we keep saying, in the East are going to be the Sixers, who are huge. Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, you can swear.
Fucking huge. The Bucks are also pretty lengthy anyways, if not big. So unless the 5 core most talented players that we have penciled in for the Celtics, being Kemba, Smart, Tatum, Hayward, and Brown, if they're like fast and athletic enough to outwit the trees, then maybe that becomes a starting lineup and also a closing lineup. But there's just a lot of size in the East. And even if the Celtics aren't playing the Bucks and the Sixers on a given night, they got to get ready for them.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, the two best players in the Eastern Conference, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Joel Embiid, both giant humans. Giannis isn't necessarily as wide and girthy as Joel, but he's longer and lankier. So it's just like, if you want to get to the Eastern Conference Finals or get to the Finals, you have to find a way to beat them. And like you said, with the Sixers, like, they literally don't have anybody under 6'6 in their starting lineup.
Is that true?
Yeah. Josh Richardson, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, Al Horford, and Joel Embiid. You know, Richardson's the smallest at 6'6", and he's an athletic 6'6", too, so it's not like he's really giving up much.
Goodness, that's imposing.
Yeah, so I definitely think the center is going to be interesting, and, like, the whole Gordon Hayward thing is, like, a six-man role. I also could see some weird scenario where he, you know, Brad Stevens tries to start him, but then it's, like, who goes to the bench? Could you see any other center starting for the Celtics, Cam, or another center closing out? Like, a true big, not Marcus Smart or, you know, the five guys we listed, but someone other than Cantor closing out the starting line, the closing lineup, you know, being either Daniel Tice or Robert Williams?
I think Tice would only start because of injuries. He's can stretch the floor, so maybe that's a consideration. I don't really see that happening. I bet Rob Williams will start, I don't know, 10 to 20 games on merit, on shaking things up, and because Cantor does have some injury history. I think still it's Cantor's starting position to lose, even though we've, like, identified all these holes in this game. I just think Rob Williams is really exciting, and he swats the ball with authority, but he's still so young, and Brad Stevens knows his transgressions much better than we do.
I don't know if this is it weird that I think, like, Joakim Noah would be almost a better fit than Enes Kanter to a degree?
No, yeah, honestly,
I do.
I think you think it's weird, or you think it's a good idea?
I just think, like, Joakim Noah put up some good numbers in Memphis, but there was a reason he was really bad on the Knicks, and he's up there in age, and I just feel like he's not giving you a ton on the court. If the Celtics maybe of last season needed a center, and they're already extremely talented, having, like, Kyrie and Al Horford there, I think, okay, maybe it works, but I think Joakim Noah just isn't a good enough player to start for the Celtics at this point in his career.
I mean, I don't know if I'm saying start, but I think, like, Joakim Noah could give them at least somewhat what they're looking for defensively for 15, 20 minutes a night.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. And I think also there's a lot of fighters on this team, but there's not that much in the way of leadership now that Kyrie and Horford are gone. So even just someone who is battle-tested and tough as nails like Joakim, if he has to play 8 minutes to have a spot in the team, I think that's worth having him in the locker room.
Yeah, if you're playing him, I think, like, 8 to 15 minutes, that's okay. It's just, like, a depth guy, and, you know, getting some DMPs and having some leadership around, and he's still a good communicator defensively, but, like, I don't think he's a solution. He could definitely help a little bit, but I think it's just a long-term project for the Celtics, either developing Robert Williams or trying to maybe find somebody on the market. Do you guys think they could be active on the market for a center this year?
Yeah.
I think it really, like, I know this is such a cop-out. I think it just really depends. I see it as unlikely that the team ever convinces itself, or at least the front office convinces itself, that they're any sort of real contender. Unless a disgruntled, I can't even think of who would be worth kind of cashing in on. I mean, maybe Marc Gasol or Serge Ibaka, if the Raptors decide to blow it up, as I have suggested they might. A stopgap kind of player, but I don't know that they would make any.
I have a hypothetical here that I've heard, and not to cut you off, Cam. I think both of you guys will be intrigued by this.
It's a three-letter word.
Wait, what?
It's cat?
No. This involves the Pacers. So I've heard the rumblings of what happens if Sabonis and Turner don't work out. Would the Celtics and Pacers look at an avenue of Domantas Sabonis for Jaylen Brown?
I've heard that before, and I get it on paper. I don't know.
Isn't the greatest of defenders either, so maybe you're not, like, I don't know. And he's better than, I think, than Kanter, but again, he's more of a power forward than a center. But I heard that thought the other day, and I thought it was interesting.
Holy crap, Sabonis is 6'11"?
Yeah.
Whoa.
He's probably got an inch or two favorably from you know, whoever's doing the stats. He seems more like a 6'10", 6'9", guy compared to the other. He's not super jumpy either.
Yeah,
so
I did not think of him as that big. Wow, that's interesting. The only reason, Corey, that I do think that there's a lot of momentum there is I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Celtics trade Jaylen Brown.
That's my feeling. If anyone gets traded, I feel like it's going to be Jaylen.
Contract up.
Right, his contract's up. I haven't heard much on the front of an extension or anything like that. I don't see why the Celtics would consider an extension before the season. And if he is voicing concern that he doesn't want to be in Boston, or the Celtics have an inkling that someone is going to offer him a big offer sheet, then I think the Celtics get interested in that trade. But I don't know what the Pacers, I mean, maybe the Pacers would think, let's pick up his contract, take him into restricted free agency, and then pay him. But I don't know that that appeals to the Pacers that much either.
Right. Yeah, if you're the Pacers, though, it's tough for you to attract stars. If you really believe in Jaylen Brown, now you're rolling forward with a core of Malcolm Brogdon, Victor Oladipo, Jaylen Brown, and Miles Turner. I think you could feel pretty good about that. Like, there's still a lot of potential. You have some defense at all three, you know, wing positions or point guard, shooting guard, small forward, and then you have a really good center in Miles Turner. But I'm not sure if Sabonis really solves many problems for Boston. If I'm Boston, obviously I'm looking at Miles Turner, but it doesn't seem like Indiana would be willing to trade him. They'd be more interested in trading Sabonis.
Right. I just think if you're a Celtics, you're seeing, you know, Sabonis going to be 23, that there's still the youth, and maybe he can become a little bit better, but I agree. I just thought maybe from the Pacers' perspective of the fact that they're going to try and start Sabonis and Turner, and I still have no idea whether or not that's going to work, but we'll talk about that more in the Pacers pod.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard Celtics fans talk about them trying to eye Karl-Anthony Towns as being like that next AD-type target. They do have a couple first-round picks left. Jaylen Brown's a little bit intriguing to Minnesota, but I think it would take a really splashy trade to pull him away. But player to watch this year for the Celtics?
I cheated again. It's Jason and Jaylen.
Yeah, I went with Jason Tatum. I already watched a video, and he was saying how he thinks he's going to average 20 points per game, and he sees an all-star game appearance. And I think if the Celtics are going to be as good as we're kind of projecting them to be, you know, which is 10th in the power rankings and possibly third in the East, Tatum has got to be that clear-cut number two guy.
Since I kind of already used those two in my X factor in terms of the young core, I'm going to go with Gordon Hayward here. And Corey kind of hinted at this earlier. You know, how healthy is Gordon Hayward going to be? Is he going to be 80% of himself? Is he going to be 70%, 90%? What can we really expect from him? Is he going to make changes to his game knowing he lost some of the athleticism from the injury? So I think Hayward's really an X factor for them in terms of a player. Last year, you know, we saw he wasn't himself. But this year, I think the second year kind of coming back, there might be some more consistency all around for him, just confidence in his body.
Yeah, no, that's going to be huge for the Celtics. Expected him to be a much improved player than he was last year. And I think that expectation is the same going into this year, but you just don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, if he gets back to, let's say, 85% of himself, now they have, you know, a fringe all-star player coming off the bench, giving them an excellent sixth man or somebody who can start when needed. So I think he could really change the dynamic of the Celtics season. But what would be a worst case scenario for the Celtics next year?
There's a scenario where, like we just outlined, it doesn't look like Jaylen Brown's future's in Boston. He hints at a trade, or at least the Celtics start to explore a trade. And I don't know what, in terms of future assets, you could really get for him. And at the same time, if Jason Tatum either stagnates or regresses, suddenly the Celtics go from, 12 months ago being probably real title contenders to being, pardon my French, shit out of luck. So I don't mean to be epically pessimistic, but there's definitely a world where the Celtics are close to rebuilding, or as close to rebuilding as they are to continued playoff appearances.
What's your final season outcome in this worst case scenario? No playoffs?
We're assuming no injuries in that scenario.
Or just worst case. I mean, it could be like one injury. We're knocking on wood, assuming no one has a season-ending injury, just, you know, like regular sprained ankles.
The Eastern Conference is garbage. They're definitely going to make the playoffs. So, yeah. So they'll make the playoffs, but it could be another slog like it was this season. And another worst-case scenario is losing to the Nets in the playoffs.
Seems pretty likely, if you ask me, but... Save that for another day. Corey, what do you got?
Worst case scenario, you know, I have the Celtics as worst case scenario being right around 500. That's maybe them having no interior defense and that being a real issue against some of these bigger squads in the East. You know, the Pistons, Grizzlies, Bucks, Sixers, those teams have big guys who can be some issue. Even, you know, Miami and Indiana to a degree. So I could see them being 40, you know, 41-41 as a worst case scenario. Still being a playoff team is probably still going to get you a 7th seed or an 8th seed. But that would be my worst case scenario.
Yeah, I think 7th and 8th seed, worst case, you know, get knocked out in the first round. Guys don't take the jump. And kind of like Cam talked about, you don't really know the direction of the franchise. Is this, you know, a group we're going to keep together and try to build into a contender? Or do we still have some more work to do with this roster? But what would be best case scenario?
I think... if the Jays continue to grow and Kemba continues to be an all-star, what was he, third team All-NBA this year?
I believe so. Or was, did he get it or Bradley Beal? Corey, do you remember?
Was he second team?
No, the second team was Dame and Kyrie.
Kemba made it. Ugh,
Kyrie.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. So, okay, so say the Jays and Kemba play as well as we, their ceilings have proven to be and a little beyond. There's no reason they can't at least give the Bucks and Sixers trouble. I mean, the Bucks, we're assuming Giannis continues to be great, but his supporting cast, they got rid of their second best player. So I don't think we can necessarily take for granted that the Bucks are going to be world beaters like they were this past season. And then the Sixers are huge, but they have crazy problems that they need to sort out. So I think they're, I know that I was very much so doom and gloom not 2 minutes ago, but on the other side of the coin, if things click for the Celtics, they are going to be in the mix for conference finalists, if not a trip to the finals, if the assumed leaders of the pack in the East aren't as good as we think they're going to be.
My best case scenario would be the Celtics getting over 50 wins. You know, 52, I don't know, being second seed, somehow passing the Bucks or Sixers would be the absolute best case. You know, a couple of guys make the All-Star team. We don't have to question the future of, you know, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Those guys solidify themselves as big-time core pieces going forward. Best case scenario.
Yeah, I think a third seed is best. Oh, go ahead, Cam.
I just like hearing that.
Yeah, I think best case is third seed. You know, they could end up in the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe get some favorable, you know, standings or matchups in that second round. Or like Cam mentioned, you know, the Bucks or the Sixers have some issues. You see Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown really pop off, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, Boston's fine. Brad Stevens is still a great coach, and the direction of this team is looking really good. But what is your actual prediction for the season, and where do they finish in their division?
I left actual prediction blank, probably because I was too afraid. in the division, I think they'll be close to number one in the division because the Sixers and the Nets just have a few more question marks to figure out. In the same way, like, I don't think the Clippers will be the one seed in the West by a long shot because, A, they're really playing for the spring and they have older players, and B, they have some identity issues to sort out. And
Paul, I think George is going to miss a chunk of the first, you know, chunk of the season too.
Right. And the Sixers and the Nets, I mean, they will have some injury question marks. Aside, I mean, Durant notwithstanding. But other than stretches where they look hot, I think that they'll have to take things a little slowly. I think the Celtics will probably, I mean, they just had all this time in Australia and China getting to know one another. So if they're hot out of the gate, that wouldn't really surprise me. So I think the Celtics could very well be the number one seed in the division, which then suggests that they'll beat out the Sixers in the standings and then be higher up. So I guess I will say that they're going to be a top four seed in the East is my real prediction. But then, like I said before, they're the fifth youngest team in the NBA. So I'm hanging my hat on hopes and promise and maybe blind optimism as a fan.
In the division, I have the Celtics third. I do have the Sixers and Nets above them, but I have them and the Nets separated by a one.
Win. Love this guy.
In their actual prediction. I have the Celtics finishing with 46 wins. I think they're going to be a solid team. I think we're going to see a lot out of Kemba this year, actually within a good offense and a good system. I do think Hayward finds some momentum and rhythm back. I'm not sure how much. And I do think some of those young guys pop off. My real concern is, as Cam mentioned, this is a very young team, and I really just can't get over the rim protection and interior defense. It's a big concern in my eyes.
Yeah, I'm around the same mark as you, Corey. I think I have 47 wins, third in division, second round exit. And I think you look at the big question mark being, like you said, you know, the youth on the roster, it's probably going to be inconsistent. You kind of worry about it a little bit going to the postseason. And then at that center position, they literally just don't have rim protection other than Robert Williams. And you put him out there, and like Cam mentioned, he's still young. He's shown flashes, but he's not quite there yet. If he can pop off and become a rim protector, that'd be huge. But right now, I don't think they have really any paint protection. Not that Al Horford was a crazy rim protector. He just understood body positioning and just make it as difficult as possible on the defense, on the offense. But do you guys have any other thoughts or questions for the Celtics before we get into League Pass?
No, I mean, it's really choose your own adventure as a Celtics fan. You can be really optimistic or you can be really pessimistic, and probably both points of views are valid.
Fair. Corey, anything from you?
No, I'm interested to see how the new guys fit in or how Kemba fits in more in particular and Carson Edwards. There's some intrigue me with the Celtics team. I actually think they're going to be a lot funner to watch minus having Kyrie Irving and Al Horford. Whether or not that makes sense to Celtic fans, I don't know, but I'm more intrigued this year than I was last year, I think.
I think you could see the offense pop more, and defensively they'll be worse, so that's kind of a more exciting brand of basketball. Who do you guys think is going to have a bigger improvement this year? Not who's going to be the better player, but who's going to improve more this season, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown?
Whoa, interesting. I'm going to say Jason Tatum because the best of Jaylen Brown is really damn good. He has been a top contributor in an Eastern Conference Finals team. Actually, Tatum was really good too that season. Damn.
Yeah.
I jokingly like to imagine Jaylen Brown as the next Kawhi Leonard, so I'm going to say Jaylen Brown.
I'll say Jason Tatum. I mean, we saw, you know, Tatum dunking on LeBron and the kind of coming into his own with the slight setback in his sophomore year kind of has him bound in my eyes for a big junior year.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Jaylen Brown because I think Tatum will be the better player at the end of the season. But I think Jaylen Brown's season last year was so sporadic, and a lot of it was due to minutes and not really knowing his role. Having less players involved and, you know, having a bigger role probably in the offense, I think allow him to take that bigger jump because we know he's good defensively. But I still do expect Jason Tatum to have a really good year. But I don't think he was quite as bad as people made it seem last season. Yeah, he had moments where he just wasn't effective and he was shooting bad shots, but he still was very good for a sophomore player. But getting into League Pass, how would you rate the Celtics 1 through 10?
I gave him an 8. I mean, there's a lot of national interest in these players, especially following the FIBA run. I think that they're going to be offensive dynamos. And I think that they're gonna shoot people out of the gym on some nights anyways.
I have the Celtics as a 7, which is decently high for my rankings. I think there's intriguement. I'm interested to see some of these young guys and how they develop. I think they're on the upper echelon of League Pass teams.
As I typically do, I fall in between, you know, the guest and Corey, so I'm at 7.5 here. I like you guys said, there's going to be really fun moments, young team, not a ton of defense. I think that makes an exciting brand of basketball from a fan's perspective. But what TV show would you compare to the Celtics? Now, Cam, this can be based off of watchability or the show's plot could kind of compare to the Celtics season, or it could be both.
Yeah, no, I have the correct answer. The Celtics' upcoming season is Game of Thrones immediately after Joffrey died.
Game of Thrones.
You're sick. I can't wait for that Celtics Nets playoff series. I'll be at Game 7 when Kyrie hits a game winner.
I'll say something cryptic about Thanksgiving and ruin everyone's night.
That's fine by me, long as they get the W. What do you got, Corey?
So my league pass, one of my favorite shows, The Wire. There's not really a connection between The Wire and the Celtics, but The Wire is just one of my favorite shows, and the Celtics have been probably in my top five most teams watched of the top five of teams watched the last 5 years or so. So The Wire and the Celtics.
That's good. I went with Stranger Things here, obviously based off of watchability, but also because Stranger Things is based off of young people, a little bit of older people in there, and just like the Celtics, super young team trying to come together and complete something. So, but any other thoughts or anything you guys want to get out before we get out of here?
No, now I'm just pissed about Kyrie.
I'm glad I could end your night the right way. But big thanks to Cam for hopping on. Corey, always a pleasure. Cam, tell them where they can find you on Twitter and find your work.
I'll just spell it. It's at CTABATABIE, CTABATABIE on Twitter. You'll find me on Off the Glass writing about things much more than just the Celtics throughout the season.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KWALHOOPS, KWAL Hoops.
Find OTG on Twitter at OTG Basketball. Same thing for the website, otgbasketball.com. You can find me at Twitter at OTG_Nick. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, otgbasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.